Today is Tuesday, January 22nd. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Thanks for being with us. Coming up, as U.S. government shutdown continues, the number of security workers' absence at airports has tripled. The U.S. and the Taliban begin peace talks.
Let's face it, victory is no longer an option in Afghanistan. That's clear. That's very clear.
Also ahead, Justin Timberlake pulled some sunshine from his pocket for the patients at a Texas children's hospital. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, as the U.S. partial government shutdown continues into its 32nd day, the longest in the nation's history, the absence rate for airport screeners is now triple the normal average. AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
This Sunday, 5 weeks into the partial government shutdown, the percentage of TSA airport screeners who missed work was 10% compared to 3.1% on a comparable Sunday a year ago. The workers who screen passengers and their bags will be missing another paycheck if the shutdown doesn't end early this week. According to the Transportation Security Administration, many of them are saying that the financial hardship is preventing them from reporting to work. The agency says the national average for waiting times in airports is within the normal limit of about 30 minutes. A TSA checkpoint that closed in Baltimore on Sunday was reopened again on Monday, but another one in Houston's International Airport remained closed. Jennifer King, Washington.
Meanwhile, 800,000 federal workers are impacted by the shutdown, and veterans make up about a third of the government's civilian workforce. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babbs spent time with one veteran's family to see how they're coping without a paycheck.
It seems like a typical morning in the HomeQuest household. The kids pack their lunches. Carrie HomeQuest makes her morning coffee. And then it's off to school. But there's one major difference. Tyler HomeQuest, who works for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is still here. He's one of the hundreds of thousands of federal workers furloughed in the government shutdown, unable to work or collect pay.
And just start making adjustments. You start cutting, eating out, try to make less trips to town, save on gas.
HomeQuest is a veteran, just like one of every three federal workers.
My dad.
He spent 24 years in the Marine Corps, continuing a family legacy of fighters.
And then behind you is my great-grandpa.
That dates back to World War I, and he views his job in the Department of Homeland Security as a continuation of his service.
Support and defend the Constitution, support and defend the nation, something a Marine could easily get behind.
Carrie has been out of the workforce for years, opting to stay home to care for the kids during Tyler's military deployments and the many family moves. But that soon could change.
Actually, I may be applying for jobs because, well, we don't know how long this is going to last.
HomeQuest employer, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, is at the center of the political impasse fueling the furloughs.
You know what? A lot of the people that we're talking about in terms of pay, they agree with me.
You're those people he's referring to.
Right. I very much support a wall or barrier and better security. On the other hand, I'm starting to wake up at night and be stressed because we're not getting a paycheck.
They're hoping elected leaders will quickly do their jobs so Tyler can get back to his. Carla Babb, VOA News, Fredericksburg, Virginia.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. A new report reveals a key undeclared North Korean missile base. California Democratic Senator Kamala Harris jumps into the presidential race in 2020. U.S. Pacific Northwest sees a measles outbreak. And a new study finds Greenland's ice melting faster than previously thought. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Afghanistan's Taliban opened a new round of peace talks with the U.S. in Qatar on Monday. A Taliban spokesman said the two-day meeting in Doha will continue on Tuesday. Diplomatic sources tell VOA that the Taliban and U.S. delegations in their current dialogue are expected to finalize proposals that they had exchanged in Abu Dhabi regarding a timeline for withdrawal of foreign troops from Afghanistan. The talks come on the same day that Taliban insurgents launched a major suicide bomb and gun attack against a military base in central Afghanistan on Monday, killing at least 126 security personnel. Joining us now is Michael Kugelman, director of the Asia program at the Wilson Center. Michael, how significant are these meetings?
Well, this announcement that the Taliban are going to be talking to U.S. officials in Qatar is a pretty big deal, given that very recently the Taliban claimed that it was unhappy with the United States and that it was going to back out of what had been several months' worth of intermittent discussion. What's essentially happened is that the Taliban feels that its interests are being served by having these talks in Qatar, which essentially means that the Taliban is going to be talking to U.S. officials about the idea of some type of future schedule for a withdrawal of U.S. forces. From day one has always been the Taliban's main objective, is to get the United States to commit to a very concrete schedule for when it will start withdrawing forces from Afghanistan. So in that regard, the fact that these meetings in Qatar are going to be focused on this very issue of a troop withdrawal, that's a pretty big deal.
This is the longest running war in U.S. history. A lot of people don't even really understand why we are still there. Is it likely Afghanistan will go back to pre-9/11 with the Taliban pretty much in control and human rights issues being raised more?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of uncertainties about what's going to be happening in Afghanistan. And I should say that, yes, the Americans are going to be talking to the Taliban about the idea of a future withdrawal schedule. But first of all, we don't know if there will be any sort of agreement between the Americans and the Taliban official on some type of troop withdrawal schedule. But we also don't know if the U.S. were to agree to start planning to withdraw troops by a certain date, if the Taliban would then hold up its end of the bargain and stop fighting. The Taliban has said, well, as long as we know that all foreign forces are going to be leaving Afghanistan, we'll be ready to stop fighting. But let's face it, the Taliban would have a huge battlefield advantage if all of these foreign forces were to leave Afghanistan, all 7 or 8,000 U.S. troops. Other NATO countries would follow by taking out their troops. All of a sudden, the Taliban would have a great opportunity to take up the fight and try to overthrow the government in Afghanistan. But to your question as to what could happen in Afghanistan, certainly I think there is a very real fear that if to be a peace deal, and we don't know if that's going to happen, that would entail the Taliban agreeing to talk to an Afghan government that it rejects as illegitimate. If there were to be a deal and the Taliban were to stop fighting and it were to somehow join some type of post-conflict government administration, absolutely. There's good reason to worry that Afghanistan would return to the horrors that occurred in the late 1990s. Taliban ran the country the last time. They essentially had women that, you know, couldn't leave the house and couldn't go to school, rampant human rights abuses. You know, there's a lot of concern, particularly within the Human Rights Committee, that these considerations are not being taken into account by the U.S. and all the other countries that are trying to launch peace talks with the Taliban.
Well, it's interesting because you talked about some sort of conversation about the attacks stopping, but I found it rather interesting that as this new round of peace talks begins, we hear that Taliban insurgents launched a major suicide bomb and gun attack against a military base in central Afghanistan on Monday. At least 126 security personnel were killed. Why are these two things happening concurrently? Peace talks and suicide bombing from the Taliban.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, this has been the reality in Afghanistan over the last few months, or really over the last year. Even though we've had this momentum toward launching talks, and even though there have been discussions between U.S. officials and Taliban officials, that the Taliban has continued to stage these horrific attacks. And I think it's very simple. I mean, the Taliban, by staging these attacks, wants to put more pressure on the Americans and essentially remind the Americans that the Taliban would be coming into these negotiations from a position of strength. I mean, they want to make the statement about, well, look, what we can do. We can essentially kill dozens of Afghan intelligence or military officers whenever we want to. And I think the idea there is to make the Americans feel so desperate about the need to conclude some sort of peace deal to end this violence that the Americans would be willing to make major concessions to the Taliban. And I think that the Afghan government is another target audience here. The Taliban wants to say, well, look, we can cause so much damage whenever we want to, leading up to peace negotiations. It's time for you to realize that we are on the offensive. We're coming at these talks from a position of strength, and you should give us everything we want in order for this war to stop.
There has been some criticism about the manner in which we've been trying to exit some of these conflicts abruptly. Do you think that we're going about Afghanistan the right way, and is it time to leave, in your view?
You could certainly ask this question because, let's face it, in almost 20 years, the U.S. has been in Afghanistan, spent huge amounts of money, lost several thousand American lives there, and of course there's been so many more Afghan lives lost in this war, and yet if you look at what's happening on the ground, the Taliban has never been stronger. It's never controlled more territory than it does today. So absolutely, I think that it is time to think about withdrawing, but if you withdraw, you want to have some sort of deal, and I think that's why the Trump administration has been acting with such haste over the last few months to try to come up with any sort of deal to give political cover to the U.S. as it begins to hopefully initiate a troop withdrawal. If the U.S. were to leave without a deal, without a peace deal, then the Taliban would have carte blanche to accelerate, intensify its attacks, and then that's when you have to worry about the government getting overthrown in Afghanistan and all kinds of terrible things happening. So absolutely, I do think it's time to think very seriously about withdrawing, but it ideally has to be done A, with a deal, and B, in a gradual process. You don't want to have to withdraw thousands of troops altogether. You want it to be done gradually. Let's face it, victory is no longer an option in Afghanistan. That's clear. That's very clear.
All right, Michael Kugelman, director of the Asia program at the Wilson Center. We appreciate your perspective. Kenyan authorities have made more arrests in connection with last Tuesday's terrorist attack in Nairobi. Kenyan officials are also vowing to prevent further attacks. Mohamed Youssef reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenya's top security agencies met in the coastal city of Mombasa to discuss ways to improve security and prevent attacks by militant group Al-Shabaab. The Islamist extremist group claimed responsibility for the attack on the Dusit D2 hotel and office complex that killed at least 21 civilians. Speaking at the conference, Interior Minister Fred Matiang'i said Kenyan forces are ready to repulse any attack.
We are alert and we remain alert 24/7. We are on duty 24/7 to serve our people, to ensure that our country remains secure and safe. And anyone who bets on attempting to disrupt our peace got some answers last week, and will get many more answers if they try as we go along.
Kenyan officials say police and army troops killed all five gunmen who attacked the Dusit complex. Since then, authorities have arrested at least 11 people in connection with the attack, including four suspects who surrendered to police Monday in the eastern town of Isiolo. Dozens more have been brought in for questioning. Authorities acknowledge that Al-Shabaab continues to pose a threat. A sub-county police commander, Garissa County, Aaron Ombeo, says security officers stopped a suspected terrorist attack on a construction site.
We had this incident whereby a known number of attackers attempted to enter into construction sites. That is the construction of the road between Garissa and Mondogash. Unfortunately, as they were attempting to get in the premises, they shot at a female. She's stable. She's undergoing treatment at Garissa. Security officers guarding the facility, they had to respond to the extent that the attackers fled to a known destination. We are still out there looking for the attackers.
Nairobi-based security expert Richard Tuta says Al-Shabaab is taking advantage of Kenya's political freedoms to operate. He says the country needs to strike a balance between freedom and national security.
Kenya is a country that upholds the rule of law. The moment you hear of a country being an open political system, it is a fact that some fundamental aspects of the human right are so much respected, including but not limited to the fact that and at the moment there is the aspect of right to privacy, freedom of media, all these things. They serve as a conducive, they give an enabling environment for the operation of a terrorist organization.
Kenya continues to be on high alert, and security has been heightened in areas where Al-Shabaab is suspected to be recruiting youth and might have sleeper cells. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Well, British Prime Minister Theresa May unveiled her Brexit Plan B Monday, and it looks a lot like Plan A. May launched a mission to resuscitate her rejected European Union divorce deal, setting out plans to get it approved by Parliament after securing changes from the EU to a contentious Irish border measure. May's opponents expressed incredulity. British lawmakers last week dealt the deal a resounding defeat, and EU leaders insist they won't renegotiate it. May says she has eliminated a controversial fee for EU citizens who plan to remain in Britain after Brexit.
I can confirm today that when we roll out the scheme in full on the 30th of March, the government will waive the application fee so that there is no financial barrier. So there is no financial barrier for any EU nationals who wish to stay.
Opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn of the Labour Party accused May of and said May's invitations to talk with other parties about Brexit are just a PR sham.
Every opposition party politician came out of those meetings with the same response. Contrary to what the Prime Minister has just said, there was no flexibility, there were no negotiations, nothing has changed.
Well, joining us now for an update is London-based reporter Amy Gutman. Amy, talk a little bit about what happened on Monday.
Yes, that's right. She was obliged to do that after her Brexit proposal failed a vote last week. So she spent the last several days consulting with lawmakers, trying to reach some consensus for a new plan or a slightly altered plan with better chances of passing a parliamentary vote. But critics say that the plan Theresa May unveiled today is really nothing new. It's essentially the same plan, just slightly repackaged.
Tell us some of the highlights. What are the highlights?
There aren't many. The key point that Theresa May announced today was about the controversial registration fee that EU citizens living in the UK who want to remain after Brexit were going to have to pay. The fee was set to be about $80. And there was a lot of contention and controversy around this fee. It's now been waived. Theresa May has come out and said that will no longer be the case. So EU citizens who live in the UK already and want to remain after Brexit can simply apply for the right to remain. The Prime Minister also said that she would return to Brussels to try to renegotiate one of the biggest points of contention, and that's what's called the Northern Ireland backstop. That essentially is the right for Northern Ireland to maintain the status quo in terms of customs and trading with the UK. It's been a huge concern. It's been also a very big battleground point for people on both sides. So essentially she's come out and said, yes, I'm aware that this is the big sticking point, and don't worry, I'm going to try to renegotiate this, and it will be fine. Lawmakers have been pushing for two important things that they didn't get: a vow from Theresa May to rule out the possibility of a no-deal Brexit, and also the possibility of a second referendum on Brexit, which could sway the other way and reverse this whole thing. But May offered neither. She didn't promise a no-deal Brexit, which many fear will send the UK's economy into a total nosedive, nor did she open the door for a possible second referendum. She's always maintained that the people have spoken with their original vote, and that she may not even agree with Brexit, but that democracy has to be maintained by upholding that result, and a second referendum would negate that. So she feels very much that they have no choice but to proceed with the UK's withdrawal from the EU.
So what happens next?
The clock is ticking. There are 67 days until the withdrawal deadline, and it's practically all we hear about day in and day out is this tick-tock. There are more talks that will be held between Theresa May, her cabinet, and MPs over the next week. And next Tuesday, Parliament will have another vote. This will be on a series of amendments. So not as big headline issues, but certainly issues that have to do with the final agreement. The next really big vote will be in February. At that point, it'll be just about a month before the deadline. So the stakes will feel, and I say feel instead of be, because tensions are running and emotions are running very high here, as you can imagine. So it will feel like a very high-stake vote.
Mm.
If there's no deal by then, the UK will likely crash out of the EU without a deal. This is what many people are saying is the likeliest outcome. The government and the private sector have been making serious plans for this eventuality. They've been doing mock trials of what would happen if trucks were backed up, the import-export routes in and out of France and the rest of Europe. It could affect things like airports, travel, trade, railways, roads, you name it. And it certainly will impact the economy if we do crash out, if the UK does crash out of Europe. But Theresa May refuses to allow the alternative. She says preventing a no deal and saying at this stage of the game that a no deal is impossible would mean that the UK could stay in the EU forever. And again, she feels that's not what the people voted for, so that's not what she's going to grant.
All right. London-based reporter Amy Gutman, thanks for being with us. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
VOA's International Edition continues. Humanity's efforts to move into and peer into space seem to be experiencing something of a renaissance in the past few weeks. NASA's pictures of Ultima Thule continue to astound, as do Chinese pictures from their own probe on the far side of the moon. And coming soon, the James Webb Telescope will allow NASA to look even farther into the great beyond. VOA's Kevin Enix has more.
The James Webb Telescope is being prepped for launch in 2021, and it will change the way that NASA views the universe.
James Webb is designed specifically to look into the infrared, and this is an area of the spectrum where we have looked before, but certainly never with anything as advanced as Webb. So the hope is that we're really going to expand what we understand about the universe in this regime.
The infrared spectrum not only allows astronomers to see things the human eye can't, but infrared waves are special in that they don't scatter as much as visible light does when passing through interstellar gas and dust. So the Webb telescope will see farther and better.
Webb is designed to observe the universe in the infrared. And by doing that, you open up a tremendous amount of new science that we can do. Two of the extremes are looking, first of all, at the most distant galaxies in the universe. Their light, because of the effect of cosmological redshift, is shifted all the way into the infrared. So we're only really able to observe those galaxies by looking in the infrared.
It's also just a much better telescope than Hubble, which has been in orbit since 1990.
It's a much larger mirror than Hubble, so it's five times larger in area than Hubble. It's also located at a much better place to actually put a telescope, so well beyond the orbit of the Earth. And this allows it, again, to see fainter objects. And in the intervening time, we've developed better instrumentation, so better cameras.
And it's just possible that the Webb telescope might be the tool that helps astronomers prove that we're not alone in the universe.
It's not really what Webb is designed to do, but part of Webb's mission is to find planets and to study their atmospheres. Now, there's possibilities that we might actually discover evidence or indirect evidence for life on these planets by looking at the chemistry in their atmospheres.
The telescope is scheduled to be launched in 2021 and will be deployed about 1.5 million kilometers from Earth. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
Well, there are all kinds of unusual private museums in the United States, from the International Spy Museum to one showcasing hair. And with America's love affair with their dogs, it's not surprising that there is also a dog museum. VOA's Deborah Block tells us about it.
New Yorkers have a particular love of dogs, and so it seems appropriate that the American Kennel Club Museum of the Dog will be returning to New York City in February, after 30 years in St. Louis, Missouri. While there are not actual dogs in the museum, visitors can learn about the history of dogs and the various breeds in other ways. The AKC runs the country's oldest purebred dog registry.
Well, the Meet the Breed stable has a tremendous amount of content that we've acquired over the years with the AKC. It's been helped out by our AKC staff by putting in things about the dog's origins, their appearance, their temperament, their history, and the images that we have in this collection.
There are 150 pieces in the museum and a library with 15,000 books. You can even find out which breed you resemble. The collection has paintings of royalty and U.S. presidential pets, including dogs from both Bush administrations, George W. Bush's Scottish Terriers and George H.W. Bush's English Springer Spaniel, Millie. The museum also displays the skeleton of Belgrave Joe, a 19th century smooth fox terrier that was important to shaping the breed.
This is a skeleton that was of a very famous smooth fox terrier. He was so famous, he was really sort of the father of the breed.
The American Kennel Club has been criticized for promoting dog breeding as a beauty contest. But officials say there is value in breeding to refine canine traits, from human compatibility to bomb-sniffing working dogs.
I think the best thing to take away is the fact that dogs were meant to have different jobs. Dogs all have their own jobs today, but they had different jobs, and they've changed over the years. It's learning why they were purposely bred for certain jobs and their activities and their attributes and how they would function in society.
The Kennel Club hopes the new museum's location near New York's Grand Central Terminal will draw in more dog lovers. Deborah Block, VOA News.
I got this feeling inside my bones. Justin Timberlake pulled some sunshine from his pocket for the patients at a Texas children's hospital. Timberlake took a break from his Man of the Woods tour to pop in and pose for pictures with the young patients at Methodist Children's Hospital in San Antonio. A video of the kids was widely shared all week with many in their hospital beds as they danced to Timberlake's hit Can't Stop the Feeling with its refrain of Got Sunshine in My Pocket. The kids held up signs that read, JT, see me, and on Friday afternoon, he obliged. One girl in the picture with Timberlake held up a sign that read, JT, saw me. The 37-year-old pop star recently resumed his tour after canceling several dates because of bruised vocal cords. And you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it, moving so phenomenally. You're more like the way we rock it, so don't stop. Stop. Under the lights when everything goes, nowhere to hide when I'm getting you close. When we nothing I can see but you when you dance, dance, dance. Feel a good, good creeping up on you, so just dance, dance, dance. Come on, all those things I shouldn't do, but you dance, dance, dance. And ain't nobody leaving soon, so keep dancing. I can't stop the feeling, so just dance, dance, dance. Yeah. I can't stop the. 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 Nothing I can see but you when you dance, dance, dance. Feel good, good creeping up on you, so just dance, dance, dance. All those things I should.
This is VOA News.